Hello, everybody. It's the Bookcast. It's episode number 165 for, I don't know, early February, let's say. Hi, I'm Stephen. I don't think I introduced myself last time, so sorry about that. Hello. With me today, I've got some of my very good friends. I've got my old friend from Perth, James. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm still in Perth.
That's just your permanent state. And from another state, I have Chris, who is an Adelaide buddy. What's up?
Oh, not much. I'm also still in Adelaide.
We're all just kind of stuck where we are, except me.
Just stationary people. Yep.
I am just so agile and move around. That's me. Cool. Well, that was a cool intro. But yeah, so I feel like we should probably acknowledge there's been some news that we've probably missed the boat on, so we're not really going to talk too much about the Nintendo Labo, I'm guessing Labo announcement. I think everyone said pretty much all they can on that. We don't really have too much to add to it. I guess we'll see what happens when it comes out. But that means we can focus entirely on all the cool games that we've been playing in the last-ish while, however long we want to say. I figured we'd look at three games mainly, and sounds like maybe a fourth one in the end. So James and Chris, you've both been reviewing a couple of things. So we'll start with Lost Sphere, which I believe James has been reviewing. Would you mind giving us a quick intro? What is Lost Sphere?
Lost Sphere is a little RPG made by a team called Tokyo RPG Factory. They're basically like a weird little team that Square Enix made that I don't really know why they did it, but they have. They made I Am Setsuna for the Switch and like obviously other consoles as well. Mm. And Lost Sphere is like, I guess, their follow-up. Both games, I guess, were made to be like old-school kind of RPGs, you know, because obviously as development costs of like risen and stuff, Final Fantasy is arguably not Final Fantasy anymore. You know, like just game, the RPGs just aren't the same, I guess. So these are like designed to fill that niche.
Yeah, I guess that sort of classic JRPG sort of feel, I guess, sort of Super Nintendo, PS1 era.
Like, I think we've definitely stepped away from turn-based and stuff as well, and these games still are turn-based, but with a few little, you know, adjustments that make them flow a bit better. But they are, Lost Sphere especially, like, is still quite an old-school, I guess, RPG experience is the easiest and laziest way to describe it.
It'll do.
Yeah. It's interesting because I didn't finish I Am Setsuna because, I don't know, I just got a little bit bored of it. With Lost Sphere, though, because I don't know if you guys have played either of these, but
Neither.
Yeah. I've played a little bit of the demo of Lost Sphere, but that's about it.
Yeah, right. So, with Setsuna, like, it was very, it made sense with the story, but it was very white. And that's just, like, the colour white. Like, there was just not much to it that really wore its budget on its sleeve. With Lost Sphere, I think they kind of, they've worked in opposite to that, where, you know, you've kind of got to get rid of all the white and restore the colour to the world and stuff. Because of that, you visit a bigger variety of locations and stuff, so it feels a bit more like a game than I Am Setsuna did. I Am Setsuna felt like a little bit too bare bones for me. So, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, how did... I noticed when... Oh, sorry, you go, Chris.
No, that's all right. I was just going to ask, how did that translate over into the combat system? Like you say, it's more of the old school JRPG in comparison to a lot of the games we get now. Did the battle differ much from I Am Setsuna to Lost Sphere?
A little bit. I think, I don't know, Lost Sphere feels, I always feel like these games are kind of working their way towards being like straight Chrono Trigger clones. And I feel like Lost Sphere probably is more to that side more so than Setsuna. I did mention it in my review, and I don't know if this is going to be fixed with an update, but it's kind of this thing where, you know, well, you can set the game to pause while you're going through menus and stuff, but if you want it to be a bit more fast-paced, you can also have it keep going while you're going through the menus, but obviously that's pretty less than ideal because the bosses can just keep sneaking in all these attacks while you're deciding what you want to do. But there's this kind of weird little thing where if you are switching between menus, like the time that passes between switching from one menu to another lets your characters still attack, if that makes sense. Like, your bosses can sneak in these really cheap shots. That's the only thing I didn't really like about the battle system in particular.
That's interesting. It kind of sounds like it, I don't know, a little bit like the active time battle system back in sort of Final Fantasy 6, 7 sort of time frame. Like, stuff can pause if you're in the menu, but otherwise not really.
Yeah. Like, this feels like a little bit more faster.
Okay.
Than older games, obviously. I just can't remember if playing old school Final Fantasy games, if they kept going while you were in the menus.
I remember in 7, at least, it was an option. You could, like, force them to wait or have it fully active and modern and exciting, but I always turned that off because I don't want to, you know, get attacked while I'm going through a menu.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably the only thing I noticed in my very brief time with the demo of Lost Sphere was that I did like how you could move the characters around and work sort of the location and different angles for attacks and chaining combos. But yeah, it was pretty overwhelming to be thrown straight in and all of a sudden you're getting attacked while you're still figuring out what the hell you're trying to do.
I think, oh yeah, that's like, I can't think, I forgot to mention that, is really important as well, is the movement of your characters gives a little bit more of a layer of strategy to the whole thing. Like Chris said, you line up your attacks and you're kind of trying to maximize the gains from every single turn, and you can do a lot more of that when you let players control the characters rather than just going through menus and picking, you know, skills or whatever that might go well together.
So, like, are you controlling a party during these battles, or, like, just one main character and the rest work themselves out? How does that work?
So you control the main guy.
Okay.
And then, so, how do I explain this? Chris, help me out.
just from what I noticed, when you're in a battle situation, I think as you're working through each character's sort of turn being in inverted commas because it's sort of more dynamic than just turn-based, but when it is someone's turn to choose an action, you're able to reposition them sort of in real time on the battlefield and control them that way.
Okay. It's almost like a little bit Valkyria Chronicles, a little bit.
Oh, okay, so yeah. Like you control the character, it's not like everyone can move at the same time because that'd be a bit messy, but each character gets their turn and they can move. Okay, that makes a bit of sense to me. I noticed in the review you were a bit less impressed with sort of the story and pacing of things. That I know what I was reading of it, it sounded like that might be a spot where the budget started to show out a little bit.
I think it's the story in particular. I have no problems with the story towards the end where it becomes a little bit more interesting. They throw in a few twists, even though you see them coming, but it just becomes, there's just something to play for. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like in like the first two thirds of the game, it's just very slow. Like it's setting everything up. A lot of text boxes. It's just like, I just think of like Skyward Sword almost, where, I don't know, you just feel like you're going through the motions until it opens up, and I just feel like with Lost Sphere, kind of, that doesn't happen until really late in the game, and what doesn't help it is, I mentioned this in the review as well, is there's a lot of backtracking. You have to revisit a lot of areas, or kill a lot of enemies you've already killed. I'm assuming because it costs too much money to build a new area, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it'd be much more just, budget.
Yeah. And, like, it's not a bad thing. Like, I think you could, reusing of assets is fine in most situations, but I just felt like in this game, it really didn't help things. Like, I feel like if they even just cut those things out, the game would be shorter, but it would still play a little bit. It'd just be a bit more brisk, the pace, so you don't really get... Because halfway through, it was very hard to keep playing, so...
Fair enough, yeah, I tend to agree.
Did you find that that backtracking and sort of going through those same areas, do you reckon that was an effort on the developer's part to sort of meet JRPG fans' expectations of being an X-hour length adventure sort of thing?
I don't know, I don't like to say, you know, they were being lazy or anything like that, because I don't think they were. But I don't think they were trying to meet expectations either, because this game, I don't know, I feel like 20 to 30 hours, most RPG fans would kind of say that's short. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think they were trying to meet, I guess, what's expected of a JRPG, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
and with a 20 to 30 hour RPG, like, that is quite short by that genre's standards. But even then, I don't know, I just felt like it was, they could have just cut out these pieces where they backtracked and included any relevant story content in somewhere else. Like, it just felt too, there was nothing, I had nothing to look forward to, if that makes sense, if I knew I was just going back to this cave or dungeon or whatever.
Yeah, it's much less exciting than
exploring. It's very hard
a new
to
area.
Like talk about this without completely ruining it, but like I think yeah. The people who will play this will really enjoy it, especially towards the end. But yeah.
Okay.
And I'm curious, obviously, without spoiling things, you say that towards the end it does get quite interesting, although some of the twists you do see coming. But the vibe that I'm getting, and when I read your review, was that it's reasonably well executed, that you may be able to see it coming, but it's well executed enough to sort of, you know, look over that.
I think so, and it comes down to, like, expectations again. I always talk about expectations. But, like, if I'm going into an RPG, I never expect a fantastic, crazy, really good story. But in terms of the execution, you're right. Like, I think, because the whole, I'll tell you the beginning of the plot is, your character who can restore memories to the world, basically, because the world is, like, I sound so stupid. The world, like, the memories are going missing from the world, and that's what's turning everything white. Like, this mist kind of goes over the place because no one's remembered everything, but your character can create, can bring the memories back, and there's, like, a reason for that. So, it's a very typical JRPG story, but, like, I think the execution is good, for sure. Like, it's hard because, I mean, 27 years old, played so many RPGs, you kind of have seen it all by this point. So that's what I mean. Like, I think for new players who have never played anything like this before, it'll be quite good. But, I mean, it's like us, it's pretty hard to top stuff like, you know, Chrono Trigger and Secret of Mana and all of them. So, yeah.
Of course, yeah.
I don't know. That's the thing with Lost Sphere. Like, this is what I said, is it's a game where it's drawing so much inspiration from all of these other games, you can't help but compare them. Like, I know that I always try to avoid comparing explicitly in reviews, but this game is so clearly trying to be some of these games. Like, I don't know. I don't want to be too harsh on it.
I definitely got a vibe that it was going for the Chrono Trigger specifically as, like, a modern, not really recreation or anything, but just sort of taking a lot of elements from that and presenting it to a modern audience that hasn't seen it in a while. That's at least what I got from marketing and just a general vibe online.
I think it's quite telling that the game has a lot of things in there that lets you skip a lot of story as well. And the temptation was definitely there at times, but I didn't do it because, like, you know, I can't comment on the story if I haven't experienced it. But yeah, like, I don't know, there's a lot of fast forward and rewind options. Rewind is interesting, like, I find that very strange. But yeah, I don't know, it's very easy to skip stuff if you want to, if people are put off by what I've said about the story, is what I'm trying to say. Because the battles are still, I still think the battles are incredibly rewarding. It's very fun to play. I didn't really get bored of the battles, so more so as the story and the pacing.
Cool.
I feel like I just word vomited so much, but
it's a podcast.
I haven't spoken about it with anybody before. Yeah, I know.
But yeah, now let's move on to Crawl. It's an Australian-made game that Chris has been reviewing. I've had a tiny bit of experience with it, but clearly not as much as Chris has. So yeah, give us a bit of a rundown. It's sort of a dungeon crawl multiplayer something.
Yeah, probably something is the best way to describe it, because prior to playing Crawl, I don't think I'd ever played anything quite like this. It's a pretty unique concept in how it sort of approaches the multiplayer dungeon crawler element. Of course, dungeon crawlers are dime a dozen, and there's 50 million of them out there, especially if you wander onto the Steam marketplace. But yeah, this one essentially, it plays very much like an arcade game right from the start. The opening menu, you know, has an insert coin disclaimer sort of thing. So it really does build up that that old school vibe to it. And essentially the gameplay boils down to you're playing against two to four players, all of all of the opponents you play against can be AI, which they're actually pretty competent AI as well. So the good thing is, in order to enjoy Crawl, you don't actually need to have one or two or three other people to play against, although that is where most of the fun is. But each round starts with all of the players in this sort of dungeon purgatory, which is introduced by this real horror B-movie pulpy voiceover narration, which does such a wonderful job of setting the scene of this, you know, real dark and foreboding dungeon. But it starts off almost like every game released these days is a little bit of a battle royale sort of thing, where it's a fight to the death. But the twist is, with the last person remaining, their job is to go through the dungeon and try and defeat this final boss in order to free themselves from this dungeon sort of purgatory thing. But the other players, let's say we're playing a full game of four players, the other three then play as like these spectral ghosts who have the ability to chase and follow this human player, and they're able to summon monsters and possess traps and manipulate objects in order to kill the human, and whoever lands the last shot will then become assume the role of the human again, and then who was previously the human will then become a ghost, and the game keeps replaying sort of that cycle. But the by defeating monsters while playing as the human, you level up slowly but surely, and in order to fight the final boss, you must reach level 10. That way, you're able to open this portal and take on the boss. But then, as the human levels up, the players playing as the monsters are able to then spend an equal amount of Wrath points, which is their equivalent of XP, to level up their monsters, so everyone sort of scales in level and in power at a pretty equal rate, which means that everyone remains competitive throughout the whole game. It's not as if, you know, the classic Mario Party where someone, you know, just runs off with a lead with 10 stars and everyone else is left eating dust.
Yeah, just might as well stop playing at that point.
Pretty well. That's pretty well what captivated me so much with my time in this game, and I even brought it into my workplace for a lunchtime session with a bunch of the other folks who play games as well, and it does a fantastic job of keeping everyone on a level playing field and no one feels left out, which I think is one of the best things any multiplayer game can achieve.
Yeah, that's actually... I remember I tried playing it on Steam and it never quite clicked, but I don't think I really gave it enough time to do so. But I don't know, the way you're describing it makes it sound a little bit more like a more competitive version of like Zelda Four Swords. Like that one, you sort of had cooperative and sort of counter-operative at the same time. But this sort of seems you're always going to be trying to outdo the human player and try and become the, you know, land the final hit, become the human and take the grand prize at the end. But yeah, it sort of has that same vibe of, you know, everybody playing in the same thing, just either you'll have a bunch of people cooperating to try and kill the human, or, you know, you're being the human and trying to be the cool dude. I'm really kind of captivated by your description. I'm really keen to give this a go, actually.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because I don't think any amount of me explaining or my review can ever adequately describe the sort of game it is. It is the one that you have to play firsthand to really get a full grasp of the concept, because like I said, it's quite unlike anything I've played before, and I just think it's an incredible feat of game development to create something that feels so balanced, and to come from an Aussie studio, we're all about promoting Aussie devs and artists, so that's just fantastic.
Yeah, does it work pretty well like multiplayer? Is it pretty flexible with control inputs and stuff like that? I imagine that would be really helpful if you're trying to get four people around a system. It'd be nice if you can use any controller that is, you know, connectable to the system.
Yes, yeah, the good news is it's very flexible. So when I brought it into the office last week, I think it was, we had two pro controllers, one pro controller and three separate Joy-Con sort of controllers.
Okay.
You know, half a, what would you refer to it as? Half a Joy-Con or a single Joy-Con or?
I think it's a single, just one Joy-Con.
Single Joy-Con.
Let's
yeah.
go with that.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't saw a Joy-Con in half and share that around. So, but yeah, you can use pretty well any control input, which is, yeah, again, a really good thing.
Nice. I'm honestly not sure I have any other questions. You've sort of explained it as thoroughly as I can really think to do. Did you have anything else you were kind of curious to know about, James?
This is a bit random, but the only thing I've ever heard about this game before it came out was that there is a boss battle in it, where it's Gabe Newell. Is that true?
there might be, but I didn't experience old mate Gabe in my time with the game. So
okay,
fair enough.
So I don't know.
Yeah.
I just remember seeing a headline about it, and when I saw the review go up on Vooks, I was like, I've heard of this game before, and I looked into it again, and I was like, that's the game that Gabe Newell is the boss in. But
yeah, well,
I should have researched this a bit better. But
I wonder if it's a Steam mod. Now I'm very curious.
Yeah,
I don't know. It might just be okay. a Steam mod, but if it is, that's, you know, that's awesome. But yeah, probably to wrap this one up, Stephen. It's also worth adding. It's, you know, got this. I know some people roll their eyes whenever they hear or read about pixel art games, but they've really done a great job with the art direction, using the pixel art quite effectively, and it does have this pretty great sort of. It's a really clever soundtrack in that they've layered sort of these old school 8-bit chip tune sort of sounds with. Say like a gothic church organ and strings. I'm not sure where they've sampled those instruments from, but it's just a nice sort of mesh of old school and sort of more of a cinematic sound that, yeah, again, really adds to its, you know, B-movie horror aesthetic, which is
like
pretty cool.
Castlevania, kind of?
Yeah, I will admit I've played a lot less Castlevania than I'd care to admit, but
right.
It does. Yeah, I just like sort of the meshing of sort of the old school sound and something a bit modern, sort of mashed together to make something you know, pretty cohesive and cool.
Nice. Well, yeah, that's Crawl. The next game we have on the list to have a chat about is another one that Chris has been reviewing, so you'll hear his voice quite a lot this podcast. He's got a nice voice.
Oh, you better love it.
But yeah, this one, it's The Sexy Brutal, which I've heard of very little. I sort of saw your review, and that's the only sort of actual deep reading I've done about it at any point. But so from what I can gather, it's like, The Sexy Brutal is a mansion, and there's a party there, and people are dying. Something to do with time travel. Please, yes. Save me from this horrible description.
Yes, yeah, no. You've got it all spot on so far. So, the Sexy Brutal refers to the name of this mansion where an annual sort of big soiree takes place, and the mansion's owner invites all of his best mates over for, you know, essentially, you know, big fun piss up with lots of gambling and, you know, debauchery and that sort of stuff. So, you know, just a typical good time. So,
yeah.
But this year something's not quite right in that all of the guests, one by one, systematically are being killed by these mysterious mansion waitstaff who had never previously, you know, existed or been a part of the mansion. So, and to make matters worse, is that when it reaches midnight, the clock or time rewinds back 12 hours to midday, and the cycle begins anew, and all the guests are partying, and totally unknown to them, all of these waitstaff are working around the clock to kill them in the exact same fashion at the exact same time in the exact same room of the mansion. So, yeah, so it plays sort of like a you know, like an isometric sort of game, like your classic Diablo games, that sort of thing. So it's sort of your tilted top-down view, and you play as this main character who is the a priest and a friend, a good friend of the mansion, the Sexy Brutale's owner, and he gains the power to manipulate time himself. So you're able to observe all of these murders and all these killings happen, and you're able to try and piece together, okay, how can I prevent this? Do I have to sort of manipulate or you know, ruin a weapon or a would-be weapon to prevent a guest from being killed? And then bit by bit, you uncover more of the mystery behind why everything has gone so wrong in the mansion. And it, it deals with some pretty interesting at times, some pretty heavy themes. And I think, it's quite an interesting game, very, very narrative focused. And it does have some pretty cool puzzle elements to it as well. But, one of those ones, again, where it's best played or viewed firsthand as opposed to reading about it. But it's, it does have this wonderful sort of outrageous aesthetic to it, where the characters are all very larger than life. It's all masquerade ball sort of thing, where everyone's dressed up to the nines, and it's all very extravagant. And the, again, I think the last five or six reviews I've written for Vooks now, each one of them I've made mention about how good the soundtrack is. So
yes, I did notice that in the last couple I've read. It's been a common theme. You've had very good soundtracks to listen to.
Yeah, it has. And it's certainly not a bad problem. I'm more than happy for more of that to happen. But this one, it's got a really great sort of swing, jazz, blues, sort of big band sound all thrown into one, and it just works really well in setting up that, you know, extravagant soiree theme of the game. So yeah, unfortunately, so to sort of just bring things back a little bit, I first played the Sexy Brutale not last year or early last year, first on the PS4, because it was originally on PS4, Steam, and perhaps Xbox, I'm not too sure. And I loved it when I played it on PS4. It was fantastic. And come my time spent with the Switch version late last year, sort of early this month, I again really enjoyed my time. But the people behind it, or some of the people behind it, are the same people who were behind Rime, which came out last year on Switch, which was a problematic port, to say the least. It it was graphically compromised, had some frame rate and camera issues, which were pretty disappointing for an otherwise really, you know, nice game, which had a lot of potential. And some of this has carried over into the Sexy Brutale. It looks pretty good. I didn't notice any real graphical limitations, but there are sections and times where loading in between rooms of the mansion where the frame rate does dip, and some of the long the loading times can be quite long. And there's one room without fail, sort of the main foyer area of the mansion, where the frame rate does seem to be permanently dipped at, I'm going to take a stab at somewhere between 15 to 20 frames. It's it's pretty slow and pretty janky. But I had read some of these, you know, scorching hot takes on the website known as twitter.com of people saying, oh, it's unplayable, but the reality is to suggest that is pure hyperbole. It's very playable. You've just got to factor in that there are some moments where you've just got to exercise a little bit of patience, and it is patience well rewarded. So just a bit of a caveat there.
Yeah, it does seem like those sort of performance issues, especially the loading time issues, might present a bit of an issue where it seems like a lot of it's to do with sort of rewinding time and observing stuff over and over to identify patterns. And I guess if there's long loading times between those, it's clearly not going to ruin the game, but it seems like it might be an issue that might make you consider which platform is more appropriate, I guess, that or will be less annoying to play.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I even stated in my Rime review last year that it's a good game, but, you know, purchase it on any other platform. Thankfully, with the Sexy Brutale, I would say, you know, the Switch is still a good experience, and the developers have said we're working on a patch, which they first announced, I think it was early December last year, and it has taken them longer than expected. But I would imagine that the work that they've been putting into it and the feedback they've received, I am feeling pretty optimistic about the patch, which should be coming out pretty soon. You know, famous last words, I suppose. But
fingers
crossed. We'll see how it goes.
Cool.
Is it is the time travel like so? Because I was imagining Majora's Mask. But is it like, so you can rewind stuff like on the spot, or is it more like you get to the end of the day and then it's like, okay, these people died, you've got to go back?
You do have control over when to rewind, and
right.
I'm not sure it's available right from the start, but I know the further in you get, you've got a little bit more control over sort of the increments of time that you can rewind to, because the sort of deeper into the game, some of the events occur at a later time slot. But what's handy is that there's a bunch of grandfather clocks spread throughout the mansion, and when you discover them, you can tune your this pocket watch, which you're able to use to manipulate time. You're able to sort of sync that up with the grandfather clock, so that when you rewind time, you will respawn at that particular location, which is very handy with when some of the events and murders take place in other parts of the mansion, so you're not having to, you know, wander through half the mansion just to get to sort of the area you're wanting to, you know, solve whatever the puzzle or the murder is. So, yeah, you've got a bit of control over the time manipulation. It's not just, okay, yeah, I'll wait, you know, for the end of the day. But it is pretty brisk in general, so nothing takes too long.
Okay. And so when it came out on PS4 last year, I gave it a miss because it sounded very overwhelming. Like, I thought, you know, you've got to look after, not look after, that's probably not the right word. You've got to kind of solve these murders or whatever with, or prevent them for quite a few different people in a short span of time. Like, does it have that sense of being overwhelming, or is it, like, I think of, for example, in the 3DS version of Majora's Mask, they introduced the Bomber's Notebook, which lets you, like, track everyone's schedule and what they're doing and gives you more of, like, a guiding hand and stuff. For people who, I guess, aren't, I don't know, what's the word? Like, they aren't as easily led to things. Like, does it feel like it's overwhelming or that it's easy, like, to follow, if that makes sense? Like, how many murders are there, and how is it possible to have like a whole perfect run where you prevent everyone's murders, if that's what I'm
trying to say. Yeah, so the good thing is that I would say it's not overwhelming, because although you do have a time constraint and a little bit of, you know, time pressure placed on you, the idea is that you solve all these murders one by one. You don't have to do them in the sort of one, you know, 12-hour in-game span sort of thing.
Right.
So, for example, with the first murder, you solve that relatively quickly because that serves as quite an effective little tutorial of sorts. And then beyond that, that murder will still occur, but you'll be granted a new power or some new abilities to use, which you'll need in order to prevent the next murder from happening. So you don't need to worry about the first murder again. You can just focus your time and efforts on the next one, which sounds a little bit sadistic from the point of, you know, you've saved someone from being murdered once. All right, don't need to save you again. You can go get wrecked. I'm off to save the next person. But narratively and sort of with the mechanics of the game, it does work. So yeah, to bring it together, it's not overwhelming, but worth bearing in mind that you do have time constraints, but it is quite generous. And as you said, with the 3DS version of Majora's Mask, in the Sexy Brutal, once you've identified someone's movements or their patterns throughout the mansion, their movements will be saved to your map, so you can interact with the map and use a slider to see, okay, where are they at 6 p.m. or I observe them between sort of what hours did I see them again, and you can refer back to your map, which has a fair amount of interactivity and it gives you a good amount of assistance without sort of handing you the solutions. It gives you all the tools you need to succeed without doing it for you.
Cool.
I want well, it.
That's yeah.
Yeah, it is pretty good. I think just to refer to other critics, it did get a pretty positive reception back in the day, and I'm not sure what Jim Sterling's word is worth here, but I know he was very vocal last year about it being his game of the year, which, you know, take it for what it's worth, but it's certainly an endorsement worth considering.
Cool. Well, I figure we will spend a little more time, because we haven't had enough time to do a full review of the next game, but, you know, before they even hit the presses, we can do some initial first impression hot takes on Celeste, which I haven't played. I don't think James has played. Am I correct?
I have not played it. I've just read a lot of people online saying it's very expensive, and I'm interested to know, do you guys know how much it is? Because I've never actually looked up how much it is, but that's all I've read. People are saying it's too expensive.
But I think on the Switch, I think on the Australian store, it's around the $30 mark.
I don't feel like that's particularly bad. Yeah.
That seems reasonable.
Maybe well, people are just whingy. I don't know. But
who knows?
I'm sure
it is the internet, after all.
Yeah. Yes.
But yeah. So since you've been playing it, Chris. We talked a little bit about it on the last podcast because it was sort of unveiled during that direct. But yeah, what have you found? Have you found yourself enjoying it? Difficulty changing stuff, how's that been impacting you? What are your general thoughts so far?
Well, probably the only thing I really need to say is, yes, it is worth $30 and then some.
There's the review right there, published.
Yeah, there you go. 10 out of 10, Vooks would buy.
Done.
but no, it's... So for those unfamiliar with Celeste, it is a 2D platformer, which, again, you know, we've got plenty of those, no shortage of those around the place. But I know it's a discussion us sort of Vooks writers have been having online the last couple of weeks about using other games as comparative devices and trying to avoid saying, oh, something's, you know, it's the Dark Souls of platforming, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
But this one... Celeste has a very similar game feel and a very similar sort of difficulty to it to the classic 2D platformer from a few years back, Super Meat Boy, in terms of it's got this great feel, it's got a great flow to it, and the movement in it is very, very smooth and responsive, and you're able to chain wall jumps and avoid copious amounts of obstacles and spikes and that sort of thing. But Celeste is an interesting one because I feel it's got that hardcore platforming of Super Meat Boy, but it's also got a bit more substance to it in the sort of plot and the writing and the general aesthetic of the game. It is quite a gorgeous game that combines a number of different art styles into the one package, because the overall map and the hub section of Celeste is in this, you know, really, really nice 3D art style, but then the actual core gameplay and the 2D platforming of it is in sort of, you know, more of a classic sort of pixel art style, so bit of a pixel art theme here, but yeah, it's got this lovely art style, lovely colours to it, and just something you don't expect from platformers. The characters just have this real, I suppose, sense of reality to them. They've got a really nice sort of script, a nice dialogue that they bring to the table, where it's about the main character, which you're able to rename to sort of make it more of your own journey. But yeah, it's about this main character, this young woman who is hell bent on climbing this mountain, I think Celestial Mountain or whatever it's called, hence yeah. the name Celeste. But she's hell bent on climbing this mountain, and at the point of the game I'm at, I don't know why she wants to climb the mountain, but whatever her reason is, it's extremely important to her, and it sounds like there's some really personal connotations and reasons behind, you know, why she wants to do this. And there's some really interesting, you know, without going you know, too spoilery, there's some really interesting game mechanics used throughout Celeste, which you know, add sort of that form and function in terms of they feel great as a platforming mechanic, like sort of the ability to boost and dash through the air.
Mm-hmm.
But also they serve some really interesting sort of narrative devices as well, and some really at times some really touching depictions of anxiety and self-doubt as the main character is ascending this mountain. And there's some interesting sort of supernatural elements too. But yeah, from my experience so far, it's an incredibly deep, incredibly tight 2D platformer. And if it keeps up the same momentum that it has for the first few levels that I've played, and introduces, you know, just enough variety to keep things fresh throughout the game, it could possibly be one of the best 2D platformers I've ever played. And I would consider 2D platformers to be my favourite genre.
Wow, that's some high praise. Good. Wow. I'm a little bit speechless.
So, yeah, it's pretty good.
Okay. Yeah, pretty decent. Pretty okay.
Yeah,
I think I really, really like that concept that you brought up of where sort of game mechanics and narrative intertwine, because there are so few games that do that, but when they do, it can just be kind of magical in where you'll sort of have this connection to a character in that the way that you interact with them is changed, and it represents a change in their mind state or a change in the world or something along those lines. I have no idea if, you know, how accurate that is to Celeste, but that really, yeah, sounds like it could be something pretty interesting.
Well, you've actually hit the nail on the head. Celeste does pretty well all of those things in some way, shape, or form throughout the game.
Cool.
So in terms of there are some sections where the main character's abilities are different or change, or the world state does alter to represent a particular challenge that she encounters, which sort of manifests itself into a challenge for the player to overcome, but it also adds sort of narrative weight and depth that the character must overcome as well. And sort of going back to more of the platforming elements of it, is that I read a take would have been earlier this week, I think, and I have to agree that one of the great things about Celeste is that, yes, it is a challenging platformer, but the bulk of the challenge in the game is totally optional, and so that means there are plenty of side things and secrets to find, like the main sort of secret collectible strawberries, of all things. I'm not sure whether that'll reveal itself to have some other significance other than being just a cute looking little fruit. But
who doesn't like strawberries?
Hey, I'm with you on that one. But Yeah, so there are lots of optional and side things to do where the real challenge and the real, you know, sort of ball-busting platforming action can be found for the sadists out there. But there are lots of accessibility and difficulty settings that can be played around with to make sure that, again, similar to how Crawl is very inclusive and keeps things equal, Celeste has its own sort of systems to make sure that people are able to experience the game without needing to be, you know, an experienced platform gamer sort of thing. They're not settings that I've played around with, but I just did a little bit of reading, and there's some things that people can switch on and off, which include like invincibility if people are struggling to get past a particularly perilous section full of spikes, which there are a few, and also changing the speed of the game. So perhaps slowing things down to give them a little bit more time to make decisions while in midair, because one of the big things with being able to boost midair is that you definitely need to be able to make decisions midair quickly and change directions on a regular basis, which it's great when you find yourself getting into a flow where things just, you know, you find yourself into like a rhythmic flow and things just click, mm-hmm. which is why I love platformers. When you know, get that flow, it's just a fantastic feeling. But there are times where I can imagine a lot of people will think, I don't have time to, you know, try and fight this particular, this particular section. I just want to experience the next bit of the story or see what's next. And they can switch on the settings. So
yeah, I guess yeah, it allows you to awesome. Adjust it to your priorities. Like I don't know that I'd want to change it because I, you know, quite enjoy the challenge. But you know, if other people are more prioritizing on the narrative or, you know, perceive a different level of challenge, then they can sort of get as much enjoyment out of it for different reasons as me.
But I think like that's testament to like how, because you were saying that Celeste has a story and it weaves quite well in with the gameplay, whereas if you were to offer those options in a game like, say, Super Meat Boy, I don't really think people would want to. Do you know what I mean? Like, it wouldn't be the same.
Mm.
Yeah, there's not much more to Super Meat Boy than overcoming the challenges.
I mean, there is a story, but, you know, like, I don't think it's going to be, you know, people are going to be playing for that.
Yeah, it's not actually really,
I have a
deciding
question. Chris, have you played Ori and the Blind Forest?
Oh, yes, I have. It's a beautiful game.
The way that you're describing, like, mid-air dashing and everything like that, it has reminded me of that. Is it like that at all with the platforming, or am I just...
Yeah, now that you mention that, I'm just trying to remember, because it was a little while since I've played Ori, but, yeah, from what I can recall, there are similarities in how you use that mid-air dash. So it does use it quite effectively.
Cool. Well, if you're looking for more fleshed out, that was a pretty fleshed out discussion, but you know, I'm sure there will be more to it once the review comes in. As soon as Chris gets that done, I'm not sure how long it will take, but yeah, it'll be on the website, vux.net, where you can find lots of other things, all the news, all the bargain guides, all the anything Nintendo Australia related, you'll be able to find on there. And yeah, as well as that, we're on all the social bits and pieces on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, still not on Pinterest, sorry, James. but yes, you
one
can
day.
Find one day, it'll happen.
Yeah.
But yes, we're VWKSDOTNET on all of the things. If you want to chat with me on Twitter or the other bits and pieces, I'm at Stephen Impson. What about you, James? Where can people find you?
I'm at Jams, so that's ATJAMZ.
And Chris?
At Bibby Boy for me, so that's BIBB. I've forgotten how to spell my own thing. BIBBYBH. OY, sort of like Danny Boy, but with Bibby instead.
Cool. Well, I'll make sure to have those all in the show notes if anyone got confused with everybody's spelling of their own names. But yeah, thank you very much to both of you for coming on, and thank you very much to everybody for listening this episode. We'll catch you again next time, and until then, hopefully you have a good old time. Yeah, see you later.
Lovely. Thank you.
Bye.